recorded live.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to
good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Well?
Mother.
Mother? What do you want?
Mother, this is George. I thought sure you'd remember me.
George who? If you're looking for a room, there's no vacancy.
Mother, listen, please help me. Something terrible's happened to me. I don't know what it is. Something's happened to everybody. Please let me come in and keep me here until I get over it.
Get over what? I don't take in strangers unless they're sent here by somebody I know.
Well, I know everybody you know. What, your brother-in-law, Uncle Billy.
You know him?
Well, sure I do.
When'd you see him last?
Today, over at his house.
It's a lie. He's been in the insane asylum ever since he lost his business. If you ask me, that's where you belong.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. Next, we'll be Talking Twilight Zone.
Hey folks, my name is Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone, along with my wonderful co-hosts, Bobby, Robert, and Dave. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
And I
hello.
Would also... Hello. And I'd also like to welcome Kobo, 4747, and Ed is here. Hello, Ed.
Hey,
glad
Lynn.
To see you back. Hi. Glad you're back. Missed you there for a while. But I hope everyone had a good holiday. The holidays are now once again behind us, and I just hope everybody had a wonderful Christmas and New Year's Eve. And I also hope, as I'm sure we all do, that everyone continues to have a happy, healthy, and prosperous year 2013. So with that, I will say that today we're discussing one of those typical episodes of lost identity, missing identity. It's done.
No, actually, it's a missing episode. Oh, we can't do it. It's missing.
It's missing.
Do the little people today.
You know, one of those episodes that it's been done to death in movies and television shows, and it's called Person or Persons Unknown. And Robert, I'm sure you have an opening clip for us.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Cameo of a man who has just lost his most valuable possession. He doesn't know about the loss yet. In fact, he doesn't even know about the possession. Because, like most people, David Gurney has never really thought about the matter of his identity. But he's going to be thinking a great deal about it from now on. Because that is what he's lost. And his search for it is going to take him into the darkest corners of the Twilight Zone.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. I appreciate that. Oh, and Felix is here. Hi, Felix. So good to see you again. Missed you the past couple of weeks. And so, this episode is about a man named David Gurney, and he wakes up to find that nobody, including his wife, knows who he is. And she, of course, is lying in bed next to him, and she doesn't know him, and nobody else does either. And all evidence of his identity has disappeared. So, after he goes to work, and they throw him out because they don't recognize him. All of his coworkers don't recognize him. And he goes to a bar, and I think the bar comes later, but he goes all over the place. Nobody knows him. And they end up putting him in an insane asylum. And he manages to escape after a psychiatrist named Dr. Kostlenko tries to tell him that David Gurney doesn't exist. Yet Gurney, he thinks that there's some kind of a practical joke or that someone or something wants to block him out completely. So he finally tracks down a photograph of himself and his wife together. However, when the police arrive with the psychiatrist, the picture has somehow changed, and now it only portrays David Gurney standing alone. He throws himself down to the ground, and he wakes up once again in his bed. And it would seem that the whole adventure was a bad dream. But then his wife gets up from the bed, and she's talking to him from the bathroom, where she's removing the cold cream from her face. And when she comes back and turns around, Gurney is horrified to discover that even though she acts and talks the same way, she doesn't look anything at all like the wife he knows. Do, do, do.
Might be an improvement for him. Who knows?
Actually, yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was.
I like a hot blonde raking up me.
Yeah. I thought the wife at the end was a lot better looking than the one at the beginning. I don't know what he was so horrified. He should have been saying, "Hey, this is great." You know? I mean, she was a lot better. But, this is one of those typical episodes that you see in so many movies and TV shows. I mean, well, let me see. How many other Twilight Zone episodes does it remind me of with respect to a character or characters meeting relatives or friends?
Walking Distance and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The ones that come to mind are Walking Distance, of course. He couldn't be recognized by his parents as an adult. Then you have And When the Sky Was Open. And those astronauts weren't recognized. Well, first of all, they didn't recognize each other. And then the one calls his mother, and his mother didn't know who he was, never heard of him. And then you have A World of Difference, where you have that the guy who's an act, who's a businessman, and all of a sudden he's an actor, and he doesn't recognize the woman he's supposed to be married to. And you also have Nightmare as a Child, and that's a woman who does not recognize herself as a child, which I always thought was very stupid. I mean, how can you be sitting there talking to yourself as a child and not recognize that it's you? I mean, come on. You don't know what you look like as a child? Oh, and then the last one that I think about is The Arrival, where you've got a delusional man. He runs into an office and finds that the men he was just speaking to in an airport hangar don't recognize him at all. And I'm sure there are more beyond those, but person or persons unknown just seems to be the same old been there, done that type of story that we've seen in the past. You know, you have David Gurney, he wakes up, wife doesn't recognize him, nobody else knows him, his best friend, his mother, his coworkers, and his friendly neighborhood bartender. They all have no idea who he is, and they don't really care.
And if he had a dog, his dog probably wouldn't recognize him either.
Exactly. And they, you know, they just think he's a nut. Everybody thinks he's a nut, and he needs to be institutionalized. Okay, well, so much for any excitement in this one. I mean, I know you, you don't know me, so now what? So I guess the only way to conclude the story is to have him wake up on the other side of the fence. Now his wife recognizes him. He doesn't know her. So actually, you know, he should have been – well, I just thought he should have been thrilled with the second wife because she was really much more attractive than the first one. And, of course, you know, Gurney through the whole thing, he's assuming that this whole identity crisis is a joke played by his friend Petey. He thinks it's an elaborate ruse or something that he's playing. But who – I mean, think, Mr. Gurney, who goes this far to play such a joke on someone? He didn't indicate that it was his birthday. I mean, why would anybody do such a thing, especially to the point of having his wife arrive at his place of work with the police? I mean, that's ridiculous. And
I don't know. It kind of reminded me of the movie The Game.
The Game. Oh, The Game. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Kobo.
So somebody would conceivably go to that kind of lengths to play a practical joke on somebody. I mean, I know it's a bit out there, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. I mean, who would go to, you know, to those extremes? But, boy, that was... I mean, and I thought in the beginning that he was going to say, well, you know, maybe he's experiencing all such sorts of nightmares that he couldn't wake up from. You know, because The only thing that bothered me is there was never any type of an explanation for what happened to him, which is typical, I guess, of the Twilight Zone. There's a lot of episodes where you don't get really an explanation. It's just you're just supposed to go with your imagination, suspension of disbelief, that sort of thing. But it was almost like I was thinking might be Shadow Play, the one with Dennis Weaver, where he's just going through the same nightmare over and over again. But with different people in the same roles, that's kind of what it reminded me of toward the end. But it never went that far. And one other thing I noticed, the photo of the boxer that Gurney notices behind the bar, that's the exact same photo shown on the wall in the episodes What You Need and the kind of stopwatch. I think it was the same, like, bar wall or something. And, but Richard Long, he does a great job. He does a really good job as the distraught and confused David Gurney. And I liked the bartender. That was an actor named Clay Coit, character actor. And I thought he was very good. You know, he looked the part of the bartender. He played that well. And I thought the look of terror on Long's face during the final scene, that was really well done. I mean, that's really good acting when you can get that kind of terror on your face. But it doesn't change the fact that, you know, this is an old, boring plot and storyline. So, you know, for the good acting alone, and I do like Richard Long, I'm going to give it a 1.5 rating, but I've seen a lot worse. But it's just such a deja vu, you know, been there, done that thing. So I'm going to turn it over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I like Richard Long, and we talked about him before, too. I think there was an episode we were reviewing, and I sent you guys the movie called The Cult of the Cobra.
Yeah, with David Jansen.
With David Jansen and all that, yeah. And, you know, I'm a Richard Long fan. House on Haunted Hill with Vincent Price, he was in that one. And he's been in also the Big Valley series, Nanny and the Professor. So, I mean, you know, he had a long life. And, you know, as a lot of people, he's a smoker as well, too. So, you know, that was we mentioned before, some of the actors felt that was a cool thing to do was the smoke. Unfortunately, a lot of that took a lot of people's lives back then, later on.
Including Rod Serling, yeah.
I made the joke on the when I did the review, but inadvertently I put the wrong name down because I was trying to, you know, make it sound like, you know, about Jared Barkley was dreaming all this, and then you know, he was dreaming he was the banker David Gurney. He wakes up and, you know, the whole story here. And then,
oh, I remember that. Yeah.
But I put the wrong name in. I put Charles Barkley instead of
Jared Barkley. Oh, yeah, the basketball player. I remember it. And so I forget who caught that, but somebody.
Paul.
Jack. I think it was Jack.
Jack or Paul, one of them. Yeah, they were joking around with me about that. They knew what I meant, though, but yeah, it was kind of funny.
Ed's laughing here, too.
But anyway. I meant Jared Barkley in the thing, but they got the joke, you know, him waking up and going downstairs having breakfast, telling his family about his dream of the future. So, you know, it was a lot of movies and stuff that came to mind because, I mean, this is, as you said, it's a worn, tread out, you know, type situation that's been used in TV and movies. And I think... you know, like I said, unfortunately, it's played out. It was rather boring, uninteresting. My question for this whole thing is, what if God or some being took you out of existence and put you in the world to survive with no ID and no sense of or means of survival? You know, and I made the comment, where's Clarence, the angel, when you need him? So that's what the It's a Wonderful Life clip was at the beginning of the show there. Pretty much, you know, he got his wish, you know, not to be born inadvertently, I think, because he was mad at the time and, you know, he wasn't thinking about it. And Clarence, you know, and God took it upon themselves to show him what it was like without him being born. And, less of a Bailey in the picture, so to say. So, but a couple of things did come to mind, and the first one is Memento. Memento is kind of an interesting one because, as Pulp Fiction, as The Machinist, these pieces are shown out of order. It's about this guy who was an insurance agent, had an accident, his wife was killed, and he can no longer do short-term memory. He has his long-term memory, but his short-term memory is affected, and he wakes up as a new person every day without the memory of the previous day. So here's a clip from that.
Hi. I'm Mr. Shelby from 304.
All right, what can I do for you, Leonard?
Bert, I'm not sure. I think I may have asked you to hold my calls.
You don't know?
Well, I think I may have. I'm not too good on the phone.
Right, you said you like to look people in the eye when you talk to them.
Yeah.
You don't remember saying that.
Well, that's the thing. I have this condition.
A condition?
It's my memory.
Amnesia?
No. It's different from that. I have no short-term memory. I know who I am. I know all about myself. Since my injury, I can't make new memories. Everything fades. If we talk for too long, I'll forget how we started. And next time I see you, I'm not going to remember this conversation. I don't even know if I've met you before. So if I seem a little strange or rude or something, I've told you this before, haven't I?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to mess with you, but it's so weird. You don't remember me at all.
No.
We've talked a bunch of times.
I'm sure we have, yeah.
Well, what's the last thing you remember?
My wife.
What's it like?
It's like waking. It's like you just woke up.
That must suck. It's all backwards. I mean, maybe you got an idea about what you want to do next, but you don't remember what you just did.
I say it must suck also.
What was that from?
Memento.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you have that up there, Davey. I just saw that.
Very good movie when you get
Guy
a chance.
Guy Pearce.
What's that?
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of movies. Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce plays
the main character. Yeah.
He was in the remake of The Time Machine, unfortunately, the remake of The Time Machine.
Mm. Ed saw it, too. Ed's saying great movie.
It is, and like I said, in the vein of Pulp Fiction, where everything's out of order,
mm-hmm.
and The Machinist with Christian Bale, same situation with him. In that movie.
And a comedic take on this whole thing is the movie 50 First Dates with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, 50 First Dates. Yeah,
no,
I saw that movie. That was a
funny movie. No, 50 First Date is a different one. 50 First Date, I think you said.
Dates.
There's a film called 50 First State.
Yeah, he says dates. Dates, Dave.
Right, yeah, I was going to say that I thought Lynn said states, because there's another film called The 51st State.
No, 51st Dates, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a comedic take on this whole losing your memory thing and losing your identity.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that.
And another one was called The Net, with Sandra Bullock, where her identity is erased.
That was a good movie, too.
Yeah, she's trying to go around and trying to find who wiped her out of existence. And in society, it has happened before where, you know, a person was wiped and or their identity was stolen and used to purchase things. So, I mean, there is the connection in real life with something like this. My last clip I'm going to finish up with, and what I finished up my review with, is a TV series came to mind called Fringe, which in season 4, and spoiler warnings for people, the character Peter Bishop pulled out of his timeline, causing him not to exist in that timeline that he is brought back to. That was basically season 4. Season 5, which is going on, they got like 3 more episodes left. It's up to episode 10. and it's kind of unfortunate because I do like Fringe. I've watched every episode, every season. I hadn't missed one, and I got seasons 1 through 4 here at home. Season 5 focuses on the future, and their little girl, Etta, they come across again, and also in a character in the series called the Observers. Is in season 5 as well. But I thought was quite interesting, after season 3, they decided to do a twist. And
Ed's yelling at you, Robert.
Yeah. Sorry, Ed, I did give my spoiler warning. Well, anyway, well, cover your ears, Ed, because I'm playing a clip from it. If you don't want to hear the clip, cover your ears for about a minute. 4 seconds.
Previously on Fringe.
I've been seeing him in my dreams for the past 3 weeks.
A shared vision like this, it must be real. Father and son just pulled a man from the middle of Raven Lake. There were things no one outside this division could possibly know.
Xavier, thank God you're here.
Who are you? He's saying that his name is Peter Bishop.
Hello, Walter.
I don't know who you are, but you claim to be my son. My son drowned.
I know this must be confusing for you. I need you to help me figure out why no one remembers me. Why you don't remember me.
Wherever you came from, however you got here, it doesn't matter. I can't help you.
Sorry if I woke you up.
It's all right. I was already awake.
There's something going on, and we think it has something to do with you. With your appearance here.
Okay, what kind of something?
We're not sure, but we think it has to do with time.
Excellent series. If hadn't seen it, all 4 seasons is out on DVD. 5th season is still in progress, but it's going to be sad because they were fortunately given 13 episodes to wrap everything up, which is what they're trying to do. Also, this is one that's produced by J.J. Abrams. As we know, J.J. Abrams did shows like Felicity. He also did the Star Trek reboot in the 2009 movie. We have the second Star Trek one coming out this year. And
is Fringe being canceled?
Well, it was on the verge. I think that's why they're giving them the 5th season, because they slotted Fringe in the Friday time slot, which is known as the death slot to a lot of people. And so they went ahead and give them season 5 to wrap everything up, which is only right because, I mean, it's a great concept. It's a great series to get into. Like I said, I've been there since the pilot episode up to episode 10, and then we got like 3 more episodes left to go. And I mean, it's a fascinating series. We've had appearances by Leonard Nimoy as William Bell. And William Bell is one of the co-founders of Dynamics.
Massive Dynamics.
Massive Dynamics. Thank you, Kobo.
And
anytime they had Nimoy in, and they usually bring him towards the end, he is brilliant. And that, I guess him and JJ are real close because they brought him back as the prime Spock in the Star Trek movie that came out in 2009. So, I mean, he's a great actor, and it's wonderful that they cast him as William Bell because, man, I'll tell you what, it really does add a click to the series. And that's pretty much it for me. Unfortunately, I didn't give it the half nudge that Lynn gave it. I only gave it a 1 out of 5. So I'll go ahead and pass it on to Bobby.
Oh, is it my turn?
Well, you said you didn't want to talk about it. I tried to stall as long as I could, Bobby. What do you want me to do?
I pass. Over to you, Dave.
Like the Frisbee. Here, catch it.
Okay.
Quite honestly, I don't really care whether this has been done one time or 1 million times. It's never interesting, at least not to me. because stories involving people who either have amnesia or wake up or crawl out of a cave or somewhere and they don't know who anybody is or nobody knows who they are and they don't know where they are nothing. There's no character development because it's all about the setup. And the setup only takes about 5 minutes. The person doesn't know who anybody is or they don't know who he is. And then once that goes by, then he goes to work and nobody knows who he is there. And then he goes to see his mother or his father and they don't know who he is either. And then he just keeps going from place to place to place and nobody knows who he is. He never really gets the message. So that's a boring story because after the first 5 minutes, you know where it's going. Obviously, it's not going to improve any. And there's only a few choices at the end of how it can end. Either everything is going to be fine or he's dreaming or, as in this case, it's going to turn around and be the other way around. So it's predictable and it's just nothing. You sit for the first few minutes and, you know, you've been there before. And as I was glad that Lynn mentioned in her review all the other times this has been done, and including tonight on this program, because it has been done too many times. And The Twilight Zone really gets a pass, which we don't really give to other TV series, at least I don't, and that is that there are just too many repetitious stories in this series. For a classic TV series that's so highly regarded, almost 50 years later, it really is not, it gets a pass on that, and I'm not sure that it should. Plus, there's always these long periods, like we're in right now, where we get one, two, or three episodes that aren't worth watching and aren't worth talking about. And that's odd. The only reason the series gets a pass on that is because the classic stories are so much better than anything else you ever see anywhere. You think about that and you go, oh, well, every now and then it's going to be lousy and that's it. But there's too many times, and I think that there's too much laziness on the part of Serling and his writers to just keep bringing back familiar themes. It's very annoying. You can't just change characters and locales and run this by anybody, and this is another example of it. So I don't really have a whole lot to say about it, but as I always do, I went over to IMDb to see what people thought about it over there, and that place is always good for a laugh, no matter how bad the episode is. I always depend on some idiot over there to say something stupid. And once again, somebody did. First of all, it gets a 7.4 out of 10 rating. That's stupid enough.
I don't think so.
But one person on there actually wrote this. I could never make this up. He said he loves The Twilight Zone because he just loves twist endings, surprise endings. And this ending, this particular episode, is the best twist ending of the entire series.
Oh, God.
That means it's better than Eye of the Beholder. It's better than Time Enough at Last. It's more surprising than To Serve Man and countless others.
And people are alike all over, yeah.
Yeah, this is the one with the biggest surprise ending. And he said it's really scary because it really could happen to a person. Yeah, sure it could. I think it's much more likely that you could find yourself the last one on Earth after a nuclear war than you would find yourself unknown by everybody. So, quite... The fire alarm is going off in our building again, if you hear all that. Anyway.
It's usually nothing.
Yeah. I always wanted to do the show while a fire was on. That's fine. Anyway, I gave it a 1 only because Richard Long deserves some credit for trying to make something out of nothing, even though he didn't succeed. So I'll leave it at that. I don't want to watch it again, and I probably never will.
Okay, I'm going to mute myself and Bobby. Okay, Dave, I'm going to put you on. I'm going to mute myself and Bobby until this thing goes off. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. It's coming from someone else. It's coming from Bobby's phone. Right. Well, let's hope there's not a twist in the end into this episode of Talking Twilight Zone. Let's hope Bobby's...
It caught on fire, Dave, because of his response to this episode, Dave.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just hoping that Bobby's words aren't going to be fateful, the last thing I ever say. So let's hope there's not a twist in the ending. Two things. First of all, I would like to point out, for those people who don't check these episodes, that it first aired on March 23rd, 1962. season 3, episode 92. I know all the regulars will know that from the Yahoo group's postings and that, but maybe people have just come across the audio and just come listen to the podcast themselves may not be aware of that and do the research. Well, he did have a bit of a twist. I do agree with Bobby, because I'm one of the ones that says that they do reuse ideas with a twist. I'm still getting sound from somewhere, Lynn.
Thanks, Colbo.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. You know, but what I try and separate out with that is the two things. There's the one is the factor of, you know, the flip side of the coin where he uses each story twice. And I suppose that's acceptable in a series that has so many episodes. I mean, after all, this is episode 92. You're going to revisit certain themes more than once in that many episodes. But then there's the other aspect about it where it's very difficult to remember when something became a trope. In other words, a copied plotline or whatever. Things that are tropes now and seem a bit hackneyed may not have been when these episodes first aired. Although, of course, TV had been around quite a while in 62. So I do feel as though you have to give them a little bit more thought for some of these being not necessarily groundbreaking stories, but they may have many times been the first people to do them. These people never wrote these episodes or did these shows thinking that people would be talking about them 50 years later. I mean, we only have to talk, and me and Robert will start weeping, and Cova as well, because like they did it with Doctor Who. They never thought these episodes. The tapes cost a fortune because they had to be recorded on 2-inch videotapes, you know, that cost what was then considered to be a lot of money, like 100 quid a tape. You know, and we're talking about when the programme was made for about £1,500. So they wiped them and reused them because they thought, you know, it was ephemeral, like, newspapers almost. It was entertaining for that week. So it was never expected to be under this sort of scrutiny. And
Dave,
yeah?
Who kept reusing their script over and over again in Doctor Who? Give you one word, Daleks.
Right,
using the same script over and over again. Terry Nation was...
Having return monsters. I mean, that's almost like having return scripts in a way as well. But there was a little bit of a double ending. I mean, you're just about to say, oh, no, it's all been a dream. And you're just about to tell them off for doing that. And then we have the second, admittedly not very good, but we do have a twist at the end where... As a few of us pointed out, certainly Robert himself, that he's exchanged his wife for a younger, prettier one. I'm sure there's a lot more to marriage than just having a pretty wife, but it can't hurt, I don't think. So shows how shallow I am, doesn't it? But there you go. It was Shirley Ballard who played Wilma 1 and Julie Van Zandt who played Wilma 2. And I was reading a little bit about, of course, the main actor that had the lead part, who actually I liked as an actor because I remember watching him in the Big Valley?
Big Valley.
And, of course, I've lost his blooming name now.
Richard Long.
Yeah. And, again, sadly, died at only age 47. Does seem amazing. And quite a few of the actors here died. He married twice. His first actor died young, and then he married a beautiful model and had children with her. But it just seems as though a lot of these, of course, were heavy smokers at the time. One of the things, it was nice to have my namesake in the thing. There was a Mr. Cooper in the show. I quite like that. I think Cooper's probably a fairly common name in the United States. I don't know. One other thing, I don't know how this translates into the vernacular in the United States, but the main character's name was Gurney. Now, Gurney, of course, is one of those sort of beds, movable beds with wheels that they use in hospitals. But the common name for that here in the UK and many other countries is not a gurney, but a trolley. And one of the things that we say about people that in the situation that this man was in terms of, like our life on Mars, you know, is he mad in a coma or whatever, we say something like that is off their trolley. So I don't know whether, you know, the writer's a bit of an Anglophile and knew that the word gurney meant trolley, as in off your trolley, or whether that was just simply a coincidence. Now, the actual reveal, and I think Bobby's right there, it was the point is that you basically have to get the, you know, slightly repetitive of, you know, he goes to his best friend and then he has another idea, then phone calls and even his mother and so on, like Robert did right at the beginning with the audio clip. And for those who are really dreaming, that first audio clip wasn't from the Twilight Zone. It's from It's a Wonderful Life, just in case they thought what was happening. And that was, of course, George Bailey. I don't think they had the budget, but what I think would have worked rather nicely is when he finally discovers that picture and he looks at it, and he first looks at it and he sees himself and his wife together. I would have liked it if, you know, he's sort of holding it down at his side and the you know, the doctor or psychiatrist comes in, and as he's explaining to him, you know, and he's holding this ace in the hole, as it were, he's going to be a big reveal and say, so you thought I was mad, did you? It would have been lovely if the camera could have panned down and a la Back to the Future, the wife could have just been fading out of the picture in some sort of, you know, CGI sort of effect. And so we see the reveal before he goes, ta-ta, shows the picture. And, of course, we know that all the time he's been talking, this woman has been phased out of his life timeline. So
it would have been great, Dave, if he would have looked up at God and said, quit using the eraser, please.
Yeah. How many fingers have you got up? 7. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you know the reference to that one. So all in all, because of the repetitive nature of the story, which had to be, I suppose 2.5 is probably all you can say. But I think it could have been better. I think they could have got a little bit more out of this. In fact, the most exciting dialogue was the opening monologue. That promised more than perhaps the episode did deliver. So taking it at its time when it was, and I do particularly like that lead actor, I quite enjoyed it, but I probably can't give it a 3. So I'm going to give it, you know, middle of the road, 2.5 out of 5. And Lynn, I've just done, if you want to come back on audio.
Yeah, I'm back. Oh, yeah, that stupid recording's still on, but I'm going to give it over to Ed.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Ed. I'll be muting myself again.
Okay. I told you, Lynn, remember to turn that stove off. You're going to catch a place on fire.
It's quite the dramatic siren in the background.
The fire department just pulled up. They'll turn it off. The fire department just pulled up.
Oh, man. My sister
will
live there. How you doing, guys?
I'm sorry about the fringe situation. I tried to warn you as quickly as possible. But
oh, that's all right. I was just goofing around anyway. I am catching up on it, but I will live. Don't worry. Not a problem. Yeah, it's quite a dramatic siren she's got going on in the background there, huh? Anyway,
nothing like being active in January. Just too many lazy, tired individuals. We have to have some excitement going on. Maybe a little fire, you know, gunshot somewhere. You know,
well, it's, you know, if the alarm's constantly going off, it's, you know, in the wintertime, you don't want to constantly have to go outside. That's a pain in the neck. Especially if there's not really a fire.
Remember school when we were younger, Ed? And the fire alarm would go off when it's about 20 freaking degrees out, and we all had to go in line, go out of our classrooms, and stand outside.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know.
This is never a fire. It's always somebody leaves something in their microwave or something, and the smoke sets the fire alarm off. Nobody ever leaves. Nobody leaves. It's just... This is like the third time since we've been in this apartment building now, since the end of October, that this alarm is going off. Third time, and it's never anything. That's why I don't go anywhere. Anyway, go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Well, that's kind of scary, because then when you actually get a fire, you're not even going to know it. But anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But I'll take my chance. It's too cold to go out. Oh, well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was just an aside before I go on here. My sister-in-law lived in an apartment building where their fire alarm went off at least once a week, if not twice a week. And, yeah, I finally got the best of her. She left that building. But anyway, moving right along. Yeah, this episode, where do I begin? Well, Rod Serling at the very beginning, you know, he says...
Or begin at the middle and work towards the end, just like
these
are the examples we give.
We'll
start at the beginning.
yeah, you know, wherever it takes us, I guess. You know, Rod Serling starts at the beginning saying he's taking us to the darkest corners of the Twilight Zone, but I don't know if this episode was very dark. It didn't have any, I don't know, I guess it didn't have the terror that I'm assuming Mr. Serling hoped it would contain, probably due to the fact that, as everybody here has mentioned, we've seen this before, you know. We've seen this vanished identity story over and over again, as of our day and age. But I'm guessing, you know, like Dave was saying, back in 1962, it probably would have had a little more power, maybe, I suppose. Anyway, I still found that, you know, the episode enjoyable, even though I've seen it a number of times. I'm guessing this is probably my sixth time seeing it in recent memory, even within the past couple of years. You know, I kept thinking through the whole episode. He wants to prove who he is, and at the psychiatrist prodding there, he uses the phone book, which, by the way, was that not the most massive phone book you've ever seen? It was huge. But anyway, that's beside the point. He pulls this thing out. I'm thinking, my God, that's huge. What is that? Is that his medical almanac? It's big. But anyway.
Can I jump in there? Because I thought when he was looking through that, his surname is Gurney. He begins with a G. He only looked at about the first 20 pages. It'd have only been up to about letter C.
That's a good point. I saw that. I thought about that, too, and I'm thinking maybe it's broken up by, like, county, and he's looking at the first county. I did think about that because, he would have been, like, in the A's if it was proportioned properly, you know? But anyway, I guess we're just nitpicking at this point, huh? but it's fun to nitpick, though.
Of course, there's so much to nitpick about on this one.
That's true.
Oh yeah, you can spend all day just making fun of an episode instead of analyzing. Anyway,
well, yeah, there was one thing. He had a gown on, one of these backless gowns where they tie them up so they can have access to your nether regions. And he had his suit on underneath it.
Well, you know, it's a good point. That's a very good point. I guess the person didn't think of it. Or maybe he did think about it, but then he thought about what the censors were going to think of it.
I suppose they couldn't have him jumping through that window half naked, could they?
Oh, that would have
been a sugar glass window. Yeah.
Yeah, breakaway glass window. Anyway. Okay, so where was I?
Sorry.
That's okay. I got to backtrack here.
It was almost like a Tim Conway stem. Because remember Tim Conway on the Carol Burnett show? Yeah. And he'd be in, like, a hospital gown with socks on or something like that, some stupid weird thing. Anyway.
Okay, so he's talking to the psychiatrist, and he pulls that massive, oversized, everybody's in the world's phone number book in it. He pulls that out, and he's trying to find his name in there. And I'm thinking, if I was trying to prove who I was and I was in his shoes, I don't know, I probably would have done kind of like what he did with the bartender, where – you know, you ask your wife personal details in front of the doctor, or your employer confidential details about the bank that only he knows that an employee would know about, you know. That might have made the doctor sit up and listen.
Yeah.
But instead he's just kind of given up, and he's like, nobody knows who I am, and I don't understand, you know. But I suppose if you think about it, we're supposed to be looking into someone's nightmare. And then, you know, would you really be clear-headed if you're faced with an impossible situation where everybody insists that you don't exist? So, yeah, I can forgive that. Like I said, I don't want to nitpick it too much, but there's so many more things you could have done with the story to make it more interesting, you know?
Well, I was wondering in the beginning, how did his wife know where to send the police? But then I said, oh, she probably – that bothered me for the longest time. She didn't know who he was, but she knew where he went. And I said, okay. she called in the car as being stolen. That was the only way – how could they find him when she didn't even know who he was? And then I thought about it. She must have called the car and it's stolen.
Right.
That was the only explanation for that.
Well, you know, another thought that we really didn't bring up about this episode, and we brought it up in the past, is parallel universe. How do we know that this story was not set in a parallel universe?
True.
Yeah, I would explain it. Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
And a situation, a good one, Doctor Who-wise, is Inferno. It was a Third Doctor, John Pertwee story where he goes into a parallel universe and he's having to describe everybody and what they do in that universe, even though they didn't know who he was. So,
mm-hmm.
a reference point there.
Yeah. Well, Felix says he gives it a 3 since it reminded him exactly of a nightmare he had and it gave him goosebumps when he first saw it. So that's okay.
Felix,
that's
I want to know your life. This is the second time you said something happened that was part of your life. I want to know your life, buddy.
Maybe you don't.
Oh, yeah, that is kind of scary.
Well, what do you give it, Ed?
Well, I got just a couple more thoughts.
Yeah.
That's okay. I thought, oh, by the way, before I forget about this, yes, the second wife was better looking.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if I was him and I woke up and saw her, I would probably say, you know, something like, did you get a facelift? You sound just like my wife. What's going on? No. Anyway, all in all, I thought the episode was okay. It was all right. I enjoyed the acting. I know I'm commenting on the acting again, but Richard Long did a decent job, as did most of the cast, I think, except for that girl at the photography place. She was kind of annoying, but I guess it's just her character.
You didn't show me nothing. She said, you didn't show me nothing.
I think, slap. Anyway.
You think she's one of the cigarette candy girls, you know, cigarette candy. Yeah, mister.
So, story's over. It's overused. It's worn, but I can't fault it for that. As I said, you know, I'm sure it wasn't as overused in its time, but I think I'd give it a 2. I'd give it a 2 out of 5.
Okay, that's
not bad. Not too bad. Yeah,
that's
all I have.
Generous.
Kobo, what do you think of it? What were your thoughts on it?
I do not like the person that wrote this episode. Charles
Beaumont.
Charles Beaumont. He's never written a decent episode, or at least I can't think of one that he's written. And please feel free to correct me if you think he's written a wonderful episode that I'm not thinking of.
He wrote quite a few of the Twilight Zone episodes, and I can't think of them all offhand. I'm sure there are one or two in there that are pretty decent, but you're right. I will agree with you. I'm not crazy about a lot of his episodes either.
He's kind of up and down. Yeah.
He what?
He was kind of up and down as
a
writer.
Yeah. I mean, he had a couple of good ones in there, but I've never been totally thrilled with a lot of his stories.
No, like Dead Man's Shoes. I despise that story.
Which one?
Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh, yeah. That's
a stupid episode.
That was really stupid.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
But I think that might have had a lot to do with it. Is as soon as I saw it with Charles Beaumont, I was like, oh, my God, here we go.
Yeah,
and
his episodes weren't great.
And was this an anti-alcohol episode?
I don't think so.
Well, Kobo, they do bring that back up again in season 5, where the two couple wake up. You know which one I'm talking about? The stopover.
Oh, yeah,
stopover and quiet down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love that episode. Yeah. I like that.
But the whole point is, he woke up with a hangover and that's what seemed to have started this whole thing.
It's like they're trying to say, ladies and gentlemen, don't drink. If you do, you wake up and you won't be you.
Don't let this happen to you. Exactly.
Meanwhile, I'm standing over the side smoking my Chesterfield and all is well in the world.
Exactly. That's what I thought was hilarious.
It can't be that bad. I mean, he wakes up next to his wife. Not some. Well,
that's right.
A redhead would have
been
nice.
Yeah, that's right. The lesson here is get so drunk that your wife looks bad.
I that's a normal thing at a bar.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Never mind. Yeah, that's true. Never mind. You don't need the Twilight Zone for that, I guess.
But, yeah, I thought it was kind of overdone, and we've seen a lot of modern things that do the same story, only better.
Exactly.
Remember, yeah, Cobra, I don't think you've been on the show, Harley, but we've always said that the Twilight Zone is the root of all the shows that we have today. If it wasn't the Twilight Zone. Yeah.
I agree. There's so many wonderful episodes, like Disturbed Man, and just so many. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a lot of other shows got their cue from Twilight Zone episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And Rod Sterling was so far ahead of his time. I mean, it was ridiculous how awesome this man was.
Oh, absolutely. He was brilliant. He was a genius.
I can't think of a bad Rod Sterling episode.
Cobo,
yeah,
I remember
this song.
Cobo, I wanted to mention when we did the Midnight Sun a while back, when I was in school, I used to get to school scholastics, and one of the school scholastics I had was the Midnight Sun, and it was Rod Sterling, and it was a teleplay that was in the magazine itself, and that was one of the things I remember from when I was in school. Got to read that story in school.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, 2 weeks from now, we have a better episode coming up.
Anything else you wanted to add, Cobo? You got rating two you want to give?
Oh, yeah. Anything else?
I thought it was just overdone story, but maybe in the 60s it wasn't overdone. Maybe it suffers from the same effect as like Vertigo or something. Scary
of the time, yeah.
Scary for the time, but
then
not
as time
scary
goes on,
now.
Yeah, as time goes on, it's just like I've been there, done that type of thing. Yeah, I agree.
But still the point stands that the Twilight Zone is awesome because you can compare To Serve Man to, like, the original Psycho, which is still scary as hell if you go back and watch it.
Yeah, and To Serve Man is still one of the best episodes ever. And still, it still has a strong effect on people today.
Mm-hmm.
And the one with the beautiful woman who is considered a freak by the pig people, I forget.
Oh, yeah, Eye of the Beholder.
Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah. Donna Douglas. Yeah. Okay, well, anybody, what type of rating would you give it? Would you just give it, like, poor average?
I'd give it, like, half a star.
Half a star, well, that would, yeah, probably a poor. Okay.
Yeah.
Half a star would do it.
Actually, I got a question I want to bring up, Lynn, and I brought up my review, but nobody answered it for me.
What's that?
Someone mentioned that Donna Douglas appeared as an extra in the recent one that we just reviewed.
Oh, Cavender?
Yeah.
You know
was
what? I didn't
that?
Notice her. I didn't notice her. I have to go back and look at that again. If she was going to be in it, it would have been as one of the chorus girls, or not chorus girls, I mean usherettes. One of the usherettes.
Just saying as one of the women is what she's credited as. So.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a look. Because, you know, there's a little inside joke in that episode, too, where he's yelling out the names of the usherettes, and he yells out Burnett. I don't know if anyone caught that. He yells out the name Burnett as one of the usherettes, and that was an inside joke. Yeah, if you watch the beginning when he's calling out their names, he yells out Burnett, and that was an inside joke. I read one of my.
I want to watch it again.
Oh, I don't know. I might look at the very beginning just to see if Donna Douglas is actually in there. But no, I didn't remember seeing her. I forget who mentioned that. Someone mentioned that.
I did. I mentioned.
Oh yeah. But didn't somebody else mention it too?
I don't think so. Nobody ever answered my question.
That's what somebody
really
else
pointed
to watch
at the
it.
Question.
That's because somebody else wanted to watch it again either.
I couldn't blame them. I really couldn't. I mean, if there was a dishwasher or a dryer with him standing there, Jesse White, maybe that would have been interesting. But, nah.
Oh, God. Well, 2 weeks from now, we have a much better episode coming up.
It's and I called, did have a clip for you.
Yes, the little people.
The little people.
The little people. And so I'm looking forward to that one. And that will be on Saturday, January, what is it, 16th? Am I right? Or?
Yeah,
I always need you to check your calendar, Robert, because I always forget.
Just before you do that, what might be the thing that's getting mixed up with is the Julie Van Zandt was a guest on Beverly Hillbillies, played his girlfriend on one of the episodes of that. And, of course, the one you're talking about was in the Beverly Hillbillies. So I wonder whether that's the where the mix-up is.
Who, Donna Douglas?
She
played Ellen May.
Yeah, but the woman in this who played the second Wilma, Julie Van Zandt, was in an episode of The Clam Bits.
Oh, was she really? Oh, I didn't know that.
It was called something like Joe Needs a Girlfriend. What's he called? The Lad Needs a Girlfriend.
I didn't know that. Yeah, she was very pretty. Very pretty girl.
Well, before we go, let me go ahead and bring Rod back on one last
time. What is the date of our next show, though?
Is it 16th, right? Everybody?
It's 19th.
You're right, 19th.
Thank you. Yeah, I got my calendar. It's not up yet. I'm still stuck on December of last year.
Yeah, mine's up, but it's not in front of me. All right,
let me bring Rod back on here before we take off.
Okay.
Rod Serling, creator of The Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this message. And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week, we take a trip through a galaxy to a few million light years away from your collective television screens. We'll land on an uncharted asteroid and then undergo an experience designed for goosebumps and palpitations. Because in The Twilight Zone next time out, you'll see that monsters come in all assorted sizes and shapes. I hope we whetted your appetite, and if so, we'll see you next week. Our show is called The Little People.
You can tell that's a writer talking.
And now, Mr. Serling. I always like that. Love Mr. Serling. Okay, well, that will be on the 19th. Of January, and same time, same place. And I do hope to see everybody here, and I want to thank everybody for being here today, Ed and Felix and Kobo, and I hope I'll see you all in 2 weeks. So have a great rest of the weekend, everybody, and see you later.
See ya.
See you later.
Bye.
And hopefully I don't forget this show after we're done. I'll try to remember it. Bye, everybody.
Okay.